Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to yet another beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee. Man, it is gorgeous outside again. It has been a fantastic week. Hope you've been able to get out a little bit and enjoy the weather. Darren McFarland down here in sunny Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is hopefully over in sunny East Nashville, and Chase McCabe is out on the west side in Bellevue, while Elijah Campbell is back manning the board at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, in his pajamas. Guys, how you doing?
Doing good. Well. It's sunny here, too.
Sunny everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And it is fall, but evidently the Titans were doing a little spring cleaning yesterday. I don't know, maybe the nice weather, and maybe they thought it was spring and fall, but when we got off the airwaves, some stuff hit the fan.
Big time.
It's best that I say stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably a good idea on your part. But they did. They parted ways with three guys, and, you know, I have to do this. There was somebody on this show yesterday that said Vic Beasley wasn't going to be on the team by season's end. That somebody was me.
Yeah?
Now, did I think it was going to be yesterday? No. But it was. $9 million later, they decide, we're good. Enjoy your time.
Why do we think yesterday was the tipping point for Jonathan Joseph, Bo Brinkley, and Vic Beasley?
Well, only they know, but I think you can – I'm still waiting to hear what's going on with Brett Kern. We might find out this hour a little bit more insight there, because John Robinson will be speaking. We'll be playing that for you. But I think none of us can be totally surprised, right? It's been an issue from the very day that they started camp with Vic Beasley. That's an easy one, right? He just hasn't done anything. And there becomes a point where you look at it and you say, this guy's just not going to do it, and it's becoming it's a minus. It's not even a push. So they have to get it from somebody else. That was our discussion yesterday, right? If it's not him, then who is going to take that job? I guess they figure it can't be any worse. But the thing for the team is, it's got to be better, or else they're going to fall short of their goals here. As far as the special teams, you know, I feel bad. It seemed like everything was fine for Bo Brinkley until he went on the COVID list, and it just wasn't the same after that. So, but if you got one job when you're the long snapper, it's tough. You see guys stay in the league for decades. If they do that one job really well, he wasn't doing the job.
Yeah, well, and if he gets the all-pro punter heart too, that probably doesn't help things either.
No. You know? No, that doesn't help at all. I mean, to me, these are two. You have two separate categories here. You have Jonathan Joseph and Bo Brinkley were not performing at the level they needed to perform at, so they weren't playing well, and this team is in a position to win a division, to compete for a championship, and they can't have those two guys holding them back. And I think we all agree that they were holding them back. They got the All-Pro. You know, Bo Brinkley got the All-Pro punter hurt, as you just said, and Jonathan Joseph just. Father Time has caught up with him. He's getting blown by. So that was it there. Beasley, I put in the, he wasn't playing well, but he showed up late to camp. That's a strike. His effort has been questioned. That's a strike. And ultimately, it just wasn't fitting. I mean, it has to say a ton for John Robinson and Mike Vrabel to go, I know we paid him $9 million and it was guaranteed. John Robinson has to call Amy Adams Strunk and say, hey, I spent $9 million plus of your money, but I got to let this guy go. He's hurting our football team. That can't be an easy call to make. And I think that's a reason why he's speaking in about 30 minutes. But I think they make the right call. Now, do I think that cutting Vic Beasley is going to just, you're going to wave a magic wand and this team is all of a sudden going to be better? You know, Jadeveon Clowney's going to go, oh, yeah, he's gone. He was hogging my space. You know, I didn't like that guy. And he gets four sacks against Chicago. No, that's not going to happen. But if a guy's not helping you and all he is doing is hurting you, it stinks. It's a tough pill to swallow, but I think it's the right move.
As you know, we talked about this yesterday, and I said I don't blame them for keeping him. We know I said everybody knows he's going to be gone at season's end, but everybody usually, you know, will exhaust everything they can, and he's played seven games. So actually, has he played seven?
He didn't even
play the first game, right? So he's played.
I think Minnesota was his first game,
which was game three, right?
You could argue that he hasn't played.
Yeah,
period. I understand. More to my point is he'd played in five games for the Titans, and I thought, was he worthy of this happening yesterday? Absolutely. But we're talking about $9.5 million. Teams tend to go a little bit more than five games. You know, they tend to exhaust everything they've got before they just pull the trigger. But here's the problem, and we talked about this on Monday. Well, he finally showed up. Like, we finally saw him on Sunday. Now it's for all the wrong reasons. You saw him. It's kind of like the Bo Brinkley thing. It's like, oh, you're seeing him because he can't figure out how to line up onside. That's the only time you notice him. That's probably not good either. But it is interesting. His body language was awful. I've been saying for weeks he's been an absolute zero to this roster. I mean a zero. 0.0 to this roster. And
if it's possible to be negative, it was below zero.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was a weight. It was a weight on the team. I think that had to weigh in on it. Is they tried, like you said, Darren, they tried to give him every opportunity. It's like, okay, Vic. You know, if he were just a no-name minimum salary guy, he never would have made it through camp, right? It'd be like, why are we wasting our time? But because they invested in him, he got extra chances. And I wouldn't have been surprised if they gave him another couple weeks, because what's behind him is equally questionable. But I think that's why I would argue it might have been a minus, because just the weight of the whole thing, it's almost addition by subtraction, because now he's not a problem you have to worry about anymore. It's a sunk cost, and you got to move ahead.
Mike on our text line from Franklin, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, when Kevin Byard was venting frustration with teammates not giving as much effort, do you think he was referring to Beasley?
I mean, we obviously don't know, but I mean, is it, in my mind, easy to connect that dot? Sure. Of course.
And
I mean, remember, Kevin Byard is a guy that is, you know, when normal times he's there first, he's going to leave last, he's going to be watching film constantly, he's going to put in all the work. And so would he be frustrated if he sees a teammate that they need help from, that they need, you know, him to produce, isn't putting in the work to vent a little bit?
Sure.
Subtly? Sure.
Because Kevin Byard is having to focus on a lot. He's having to not only focus on his game and doing his job, which we've brought up, he hasn't been at the same level that we've seen in the past. But he's also now ascended into this position of he's one of the leaders in the locker room. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lost a lot, and they're missing that. That is showing that they have missed the leadership of Wesley Woodyard, Jarrell Casey, Logan Ryan. They've missed that.
So I agree, Kevin, with that. I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think we've talked about that enough.
I agree.
That is starting to rear its ugly head. You're right.
Yep.
Those are three really important guys in the room when it comes to leadership.
And think about this.
I don't think Beasley gave them an ounce of that. Not even an ounce.
No. Kevin Byard, I think we've looked at as he's a leader. You don't have to be the leader to be considered a leader, but now he's added even more of that responsibility to his plate. And I think he's handling it. I have no reason to believe why he wouldn't handle that. But it also, I mean, it's a lot. It changes his game, so to speak, of having to take on that extra responsibility. And Rashawn Evans is another one that we identified as someone that should be that, and didn't get off to a great start by getting himself thrown out of the Denver game. I mean, that's not, leaders don't do that. So I think that that truly has been missed. And it is something that we need to continue to talk about because it does make a difference. Some people may think, okay, yeah, I mean, just lead by example, make plays on the field. And I don't necessarily disagree, but those leadership qualities that the guys that I named that aren't here anymore, that they had, it spoke volumes. Because if Jarrell Casey walks up to you in the locker room and says, hey, we need to have a chat, you don't say, hey, give me a minute. You say, what's up? What you got?
But we don't know that isn't happening. I don't look at that group and say that's a weak room. I don't know really one way or the other.
No, but
I don't suspect.
Room.
It's different.
Those guys added a lot.
No question. I don't know that we can pinpoint all of their trouble on that. It's a theory, and I think it's a good theory, but I just don't know how we can know.
You tell us. Who's the leaders besides Byard? I mean, those were three. The ones Chase just mentioned are three huge. They were the guys.
Yeah.
Casey, Ryan, and Woodyard, especially Woodyard. So who's now those guys?
I'd say Vaccaro, Evans, Brown. I would say Malcolm Butler. Those guys set good examples. Those guys play hard. I don't see anything wrong with their makeup.
I agree, but
Daquan Jones.
They're way different. They're way different than those guys.
A lot of those guys you named are kind of the silent lead by example, which is not bad. I'm not saying
we've talked about this with the Predators.
Rashawn Evans is silent. I don't think Rashawn Evans is silent.
They're just different than those guys. I just think you have got to have guys that are willing to hold people accountable and make things uncomfortable at times.
Right.
Period. That's what leaders do. They make people feel uncomfortable at times.
Okay?
Nice guys are great, and that's fantastic. But great players and nice guys, but sometimes you got to have a guy or two that'll stand up in the room and make everybody squirm a little bit.
I just don't know how much Casey, Ryan, and Woodyard did that. Do you think we can assume that they did or speculate that? I just don't know. I'm not in there.
Well, of course, none of us are in there. That's stating the obvious. But if you're around those guys and you know their personalities, first of all, Wesley Woodyard's been a leader in every room he's ever been in, basically his entire playing career. So you know he knows what to do. You know he's good at it. And he's a vocal guy. He's a guy we've had all conversations with all those guys. You can tell.
100%.
When they need somebody to step up.
I am agreeing with you 100% on those three guys. Completely quality pros, set the example, excellent players.
Jayon Brown's a nice guy.
But I don't think it was
our conversations with. You think Jayon Brown is a guy that's in there, he's that guy that I'm describing? You think he's that guy?
I think he's a heck of a player.
That's not what I asked you. I asked you, do you think he's that guy in the room that when they need somebody to make somebody feel uncomfortable, is he that guy?
No, but I told you.
I think Evans,
Vaccaro, and Byard are.
That's what we're talking about.
And
I think Evans, Vaccaro, and Byard are.
J.M.
Brown doesn't strike me as that kind of guy, but I don't know who. I don't know what happens in their locker room.
Well,
I think their overall level of quality of play is the biggest reason why they struggled. They've dropped a notch. And there's been some injuries and some reasons for that, but I rank the leadership thing a little lower. I don't say it's insignificant, but I rank it lower than several other things. The coordinator change, the injury issues that they've had, and the personnel changes that they made to me are number one.
I think Tannehill's one of those guys. I think Tannehill has certainly become
I thought you were just talking about the defense.
But you really got to have the guys don't go across to the other side. It's like the line in Field of Dreams. I mean, Moonlight Green.
You don't think Bruce Matthews went to the other side?
I think they stay in their house. They control their own house.
I disagree.
They stay in their
house. I think there's some guys that they have enough pull, and the quarterback especially. I mean, that was one of the knocks on Mariota.
That's what Keith Bullock would do. Bruce Matthews isn't over there talking to the linebackers. He's not.
No, but Bruce Matthews could go to Keith Bullock and say, hey, I need you to deliver a message to your group.
Yeah, but guys typically take care of their own house. It's up to the guys on defense to take care of their house. I do put stock. I agree. I think the Dean Pease move some personnel moves. I mean, the Vic Beasley signing is just a waste. I mean, it's just – it's an absolute waste. And right now, Clowney's not a waste, but there's got to be a whole lot more. It's just not good enough. Jonathan Joseph, you know, I don't know if waste, that's a tough – I mean, he gave them something. I don't know – you know, a lot of people would say, what? Headaches? Okay. But he was in a role he really wasn't brought in to do. And so – but it just – it was very clear that Jonathan Joseph looked like he was
a 36-year-old
corner, right?
A 36-year-old corner asked to play. You know, it's like if you bring in a 36-year-old utility player to play a couple of games at short, a couple of games at third, DH, a couple of games, and he has to play every day at short, you're going to see a problem. Yep. I think that was the biggest thing. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't feel like he could, in the right role, still be effective, but, you know, they must have felt like, listen, the other guys we have are a better option than Joseph.
We
that one surprised me a little bit, because I do think he's got the you know, the veteran intangibles that we've been talking about. I thought he was a guy that could bring something to the table, but he was struggling so badly, maybe that hurt that area.
I mean, if they're healthy, then yeah.
We will play John Robinson live at 10:35, the Titans general manager, but we'll come back. We'll talk to Max Herz. We'll hit him with a little bit on the Vandy side and high school football scene this Friday. We do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back around Darren Donick and Chase on this beautiful Wednesday morning, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth. You should try this bourbon whiskey. It is good. It's crafted in Memphis. It's distilled in Kentucky. It's good stuff, 93 proof. Let's say hello to Max Herz, Anchor Down Podcast. He now joins us. Max, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Darren, I love your hype for the new sponsor. I want some.
Well, we have to save it for after hours, but I can accommodate. I can accommodate.
Count me in.
All right. I'll put you down on the list. Derek Mason came on yesterday, and when I asked him about Ken Seals, he was pretty glowing about his future. He feels like he's the right guy. He talked about his conversations with Kyle Shermer, of course, who's on the staff. Through your eyes, do you agree with the coach's assessment about Ken Seals long term? Do you think he truly is the guy, and he's a guy that can have a really productive career at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, and I think we almost knew it after game one, and he's only solidified it since then. And they've only played three games, but last week in what was a pretty lopsided loss against Ole Miss, the offense actually looked pretty good. I expected the game to be somewhere in the 50s to 28 for Vandy and ended up being 54-21. So kind of right in line with what I expected, but it seemed like a game where Seals was going to be able to throw. He threw for over 300 yards. He was within 100 yards of his combined passing total from the first three games in just that game number four number alone. And I think Mississippi State is going to be another game where he can throw it a little bit just because of what we've seen from their defense, and he's been very poised. He's done what he's been asked to do. In the 20 days where they didn't have a game, it was very obvious that he made some progress, that he's gotten even smarter, that he's watched a lot of film with offensive coordinator Todd Fitch, and presumably also Kyle Shermer, who I believe is just titled as an analyst, but he's in the program, he's in grad school, he's waiting for an NFL team to call him to either join the team or join the practice squad, but he was glowing about Ken Seals as well when I heard him interviewed with Joe Fisher a month or two ago, and I think Seals has been great. It was pretty obvious that he was going to be the starter over the course of the summer, and he's backed it all up. He's been amazing on a team where there really haven't been a lot of individual bright spots this season.
How do you explain their offense as a whole? It's, you know, I mean, that was their obviously their highest output, three offensive touchdowns. They had been good for one a game. I mean, Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, ironically, are the, you know, you would think with Mike Leach, this would not be the case, but these are the two worst offenses in the league. They're actually lower than Kentucky when it comes to points, that they've scored this season. Vanderbilt is obviously the lowest. Why do you think they've had so many struggles on offense where they just – I mean, if you can't stop anybody and you're struggling on offense, I mean, it's pretty easy to see why you're 0-4.
My biggest observation this year is they haven't had more than one player be good at any one position in any specific game. So they've had two running backs who have been good. Javion Marlowe played the first two, and he was great. Then he missed the last game. We don't know if that was COVID or a suspension. We do know he was suspended for this past game and that he will also be suspended for the next game, but Derek Mason said he'll return at some point. So anyway, Marlowe played the first two and was good. Keon Henry Brooks played the next two and was also good. If they could get them together in a game, I think that could actually work well. And we saw the disappearance of Jamari Wakefield last game, who's the fifth-year senior running back, which I think is totally fine. I think it should be just Henry Brooks and Marlowe getting carries. And when only one of them is in the game, they should just be the bell cow. And that's what we saw with Henry Brooks in the game on Saturday against Ole Miss. And he ran well again and was involved a little bit in the passing game, too, especially at the end of the game. It was pretty much garbage time at that point, but I think that's something that they should look at going forward is Henry Brooks in the short passing game. On the receiver side, Amir Abdur-Rahman, who is the number two receiver, was really good in the first game. All the reads were going to him. Seals was able to find him. They were connecting really well. He caught the touchdown pass against Texas A&M. He was great. And he was someone that I had my eyes on going into the season as a potential big breakout guy. He's a redshirt sophomore, coming back from an injury, was good as a true freshman 2 years ago. He was expected to be the number two behind Cam Johnson. And then this past week, Johnson has a great game, all in the RPO, all in the short game, 14 catches on 15 targets, which was great, and it was working, and they had no reason to go away from it. But nobody else showed up. Abdur-Rahman didn't catch a pass. It seems like he's still dealing with an injury, which Derek Mason said at one point was a hamstring. Not sure if that's still the issue, but he was not a factor at all. Mason continues to name drop Devin Boddy every week, who's a really fast receiver and a good route runner. He still has not played a snap. Not sure if they were expecting to have him back and then COVID was an issue or what, but he still hasn't played. I think he's definitely a better third option than Chris Pierce, who is a fifth-year senior. He's a great blocker on the outside. Caught a touchdown this week, but dropped another. So they kind of know what they're getting with him, and I think they need to try some new names if they can find a way to get any of them in. But, yeah, I think that's the issue, Darren. There's been one good running back a game. They can't get two of them even dressed for the same game, and then they can't get two receivers going in the same game, and that's just not enough to score what they need to score if they're giving up 40 or 50.
Max Hurst is with us. We're talking Vanderbilt here. So, Max, I'll leave the high school part of the equation here for Chase. I just want to ask one more question because, you know the depth chart. You're giving us great detail on who's in, who's out, what are they trying to do, who's supposed to be out there. We're trying to be fair for how much they've been hit by the COVID, but everybody has had some issue with COVID for sure. How much of just the lack of availability and cohesiveness is hurting them right now, and how much of it is they just don't have the talent to be competitive? Because I think that's going to be the question going forward. They've got to be more competitive if they're going to go forward with Derek Mason.
Yeah, I think it's the competitive piece, especially on defense, because Deshaun Jerkins came back, who's the starting safety, and, I mean, he can't do it all himself, but he's important to have. He returned from COVID in the last game. Donovan Kaufman is out for the season, Derek Mason said yesterday. True freshman who played the first game at nickel corner, played the second game at safety, was really, really good, barely came off the field, was returning kickoffs as well. So he's done for the year. So that's another hole in the secondary. I mean, the cornerbacks have just been getting beaten in every possible way, it seems like. Last week was the most recent example of that. They just couldn't figure out Elijah Moore. So I think the important thing to look at in terms of what the future is like for Derek Mason, and again, this is a defense of players that he has all recruited here in his seventh year as the Vandy head coach. Candace Lee, Vandy AD, said a couple weeks ago her evaluation of coaches is not affected by COVID. So I think that should be taken to heart, and When you ask that, Willie, I just think about the defensive side and how not even close it is to being able to stop a team like Ole Miss. And obviously they're good. They have two quarterbacks. They didn't use Plumlee until the game was out of hand. But
it was too easy. Just too easy how they were moving up, even for a great offense.
Yeah, and I was working on the stats crew for the TV broadcast, and I spent my whole game in the Ole Miss record book, and that's not what Vanderbilt wants.
Chase, go ahead. I know we're up against time here.
We're talking to Max Herz, the Anchor Down podcast, but he also does a fantastic job on the sidelines for MyTV 30 in their high school football coverage. So the playoffs get underway, Max, and you've seen a lot of these teams throughout the course of a very weird year. In 6A, Oakland, of course, always a perennial favorite out of Middle Tennessee, but there's another team in Rutherford County that I'm very curious about, and that's Riverdale. What do you think about their chances in trying to maybe, I don't know if upset is really the right word because they're 8-2, they're a good team, but what do you think about Riverdale?
Are we just trying to talk up Kelly Holcomb here?
A little bit, yeah, before his silly underdogs tomorrow.
I'm always down to talk up Kelly, but I think Riverdale is, this is my third year being on the sidelines for these high school football TV games of the week, and Riverdale's been kind of in the same spot the whole time, as in they are really good, and they would win most regions in any class and could compete with the private school teams too, but they're just kind of chasing Oakland at the moment, and we saw that game. Riverdale and Oakland was a one-score game at halftime, and then Riverdale couldn't defend a pass play from the 35 with no time on the clock. I mean, I could have called that play. I could have told you for Oakland, that final play of the half is going up to Isaiah Horton in the right corner of the end zone. They rolled that way, and Ian Schlachter threw it, and Isaiah Horton caught it. And I think that just kind of tells you what separates Riverdale and Oakland, because even if you know what's coming from a team that's as good as Oakland, and that's the most obvious play in the book based on game situation, it's tough to stop. So I hope that they will end up playing them again, and I think they will, because those are the two best teams in that region unless Blackman kind of really gets hot at the right time. And their record's bad. They had to win the last week to get in because they had some COVID forfeits and things like that. Blackman did. But I think looking at that region, I think Oakland and Riverdale are both better than the top teams in the region they're paired with, which are Hendersonville and Mount Juliet. So hopefully we see that one again down the road. But, yeah, 6A will be interesting because, remember, there's no Whitehaven because all the Memphis teams aren't playing, so that opens up a semifinal spot. Could be Brentwood-Ravenwood in the quarterfinals again. A lot of interesting contenders, and the sad thing is we might have teams dropping out along the way because if you have COVID cases and you can't play, your season's over. So I'm really curious to see how it goes. I'm confident we will get it done, and I'm excited to see it.
Max, I have more questions for you, but we have to get to John Robinson, unfortunately. So I'll text you those, and then I'll let people know what you have to say.
How about John Robinson's that? An important guy, so
he
I'll
is.
Allow it.
He is. Thanks for the time, as always, and we'll do it again soon.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Max Herz, the Anchor Down podcast. You can check that out at thegamenashville.com and also covers high school football for MyTV 30. You heard it, John Robinson. He will address the media in about 3 minutes. We'll bring it for you on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
When the man comes around, hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing.
49ers have shut down their facility due to some COVID positive test. They are scheduled to play Thursday night against the Packers, so I have to believe sitting here on this Wednesday, there might not be Thursday night football this week. This may be headed to a double dip on Monday night, would be my guess. I'm just guessing.
It looks like it could be that way.
Doesn't look good.
Yeah. And both 49ers teams are ravaged with injuries,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Not that you would reschedule a game for that reason, but if it's close, maybe you factor that in.
Oh, I don't think either team would necessarily be upset that they got pushed up Monday.
I think
night.
They could use a couple of days.
Yeah. So it looks like tomorrow's game, 49ers-Packers, is in serious trouble or serious jeopardy of being played. Like I said, 49ers just shut down their facility. In just a moment, we'll have Titans general manager John Robinson. In fact, we do have him. Let's hear his reaction to yesterday's news, the trade, and the three cuts. This is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Here's John Robinson.
Just open up questions.
Yeah, no, I just, I thought it'd be, you know, with the roster moves that we've made over the last few days, it'd be good to jump on and just kind of answer some questions you guys might have had about those prior to Coach Vrabel getting on and talking about our preparation for the Bears this weekend.
Jim?
Hey, John, I guess just right out of the gate, can you talk about the decision to part ways with Vic and maybe why in your mind did that not work out here?
Yeah, Jim, I just think that, not every decision that we make works out. We spent a lot of time working with him, trying to get him going. And at the end of the day, we felt it was best to just for us to go a different direction and release him from the football team.
Teresa?
John, with Beasley, how much did his late arrival to camp, ending up on NFI, just kind of put him behind the eight ball as well, limiting your time to work with him? And how disappointing to not be able to get at least one sack out of him in five games?
Yeah, Teresa. I think that, when a player can't come right in and get going, that certainly slows down the acclimation into our football program. And it's frustrating for me that it didn't work out at the end of the day. That's on me that it didn't work out. But we made the decision that we made and we're moving on.
Eric.
Hey, John, how much of a question was effort and I guess just desire with Vic that you saw?
I thought in practice he was coming along. There were practices where, and it was like we were turning the corner and it was a new defense, a new team. And he was working to figure all that out. And then when we got to the games, it's not that the effort wasn't there. The production wasn't there. That's what we're all, judged by in this business is performance, and at the end of the day, it wasn't good enough.
Teron?
Yeah, John, how does that process work? Whereas, was there a point where you guys started to approach the idea of not having him with the team no longer, or was that something that just kind of came up immediately in conversation after the Bengals game? Like, how did that process work?
We talk about the roster daily with the personnel staff, with Mike and I. And I think it was really more the latter, just kind of came up right there at the end that we had seen enough and it was time to go a different direction.
And then with Desmond King, the move that you made to acquire him, pretty solid nickel guy. What was it that stood out to him? Was it versatility? His blitz ability, coverage, what particularly stood out to him?
Yeah, see, I think all of those things factor for that position. He's been mostly, slot corner there with the Chargers. Productive player at Iowa. I think he had double-digit interceptions and PBUs, and he's an aggressive guy, a good tackler, good blitzer, instinctive in coverage, good feel for route combos, for finding the spots and zones where he needed to fit, and being productive there. So glad it worked out for us. Excited to get to work with him once we can get through these protocols.
David Buckler.
John, even when things aren't going as you'd hope with some guys, what's the risk in terms of making significant roster moves at this point in the schedule?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we talk about, David, is the making sure that you have depth at the position. Are there players that that we feel that we've worked with that we feel good enough to let them compete and give them an opportunity? But at the end of the day, myself and Coach Vrabel, we talk it through and talk it through with Amy, and we try to make the best decisions possible so that the team can keep forging ahead and winning football games.
So does the expanded practice squad this year make these sorts of moves a little easier to make?
I think that it does. You know, if you've got some guys you can work with, you know, the pool of players that's available on the street is not as deep as it has been in years past because of those, you know, you got six extra guys times 32 teams. You know, that's a lot of players that aren't typically available because they're working with other teams given the scope of where we're at with the 2020 season. So you lean heavily on the guys that you're working with on a day in and day out basis.
Buck?
Hey, John. With Jonathan Joseph, what led to that decision to part ways with him? What were you seeing from his production or lack thereof?
Yeah, I think with J.J., you know, I've got a ton of respect for him and what he's done in this league. You know, he's been a premium player, played a long time. You know, he hang his hat on that. Got a lot to be proud of. But at the end of the day, it was, you know, wanted to take a look at some younger guys and move forward there. And that's in the end what led to that decision.
Corey?
Hey, John, good morning. Whenever we've talked with you about player evaluation, you and Mike have always thrown out the phrase of, does he love ball? Did you guys compromise that standard when you brought Vic in?
Yeah, again, with any player, we try to do extensive due diligence and talk to different people and try to get a read on, you know, what makes the players tick. But at the end of the day, it's really hard to get inside and see where they're at, what their drive is. But you're right. We want guys that love football, that love the strain of football. Because of, you know, the high that it gives them when you win. I mean, that's why you come in here early and you work hard, you practice and you study tape and you draw plays up because you love that winning feeling after the game.
And why did he miss those first 10 days of camp?
It was a medical thing. I won't get into the specifics of that. But yeah, he was not here. As you know,
John.
Yeah, John. This question may be similar to that, but you know, going back to signing him in the first place, there were certainly some red flags out there about Vic Beasley. But what made you guys confident, you know, that you would be able to get the most out of him, and to the fact that Mike played his position, you know, for so long and so well, did that have something to do with it? You know, thinking that you could be able to get the most out of Vic Beasley.
Yeah, John, I think that, you know, I think you said it. I think that he was a player with really good measurables. You know, he was fast. He was obviously a high draft pick. He was productive at pressuring and sacking the quarterback at Atlanta. And that a fresh start and, you know, the system that we were going to play him in, a head coach that had played the position and could teach him, you know, maybe some new tricks of the trade. That all that might manifest itself into him, you know, really blossoming in our system. Unfortunately, that did not work.
Right. And maybe on Bo, reason for cutting him, you know, we all saw the bad snaps the last two games. Did you guys feel that the issue went beyond these last two games?
Yeah. At the end of the day, that's what it was, John. Just felt like that, you know, we saw it, you know, and was hoping that he would kind of, cause, and I love, Bo Brinkley. He is a pro's pro. He's a hard worker. He's a great teammate. I've got nothing but, the utmost respect for Bo and how he handles his craft, but it was just, it was something that he had kind of, gotten sideways on a little bit and we didn't see him, you know, fixing it. So, felt like we needed to make a move there.
Derek.
John, how concerned are you with Isaiah Wilson with everything involved so far not having been active at this point?
Yeah, we'll keep working with him. Certainly disappointed in the off the field issues. He and I have talked about that, and You know, that's not something that that we really tolerate here. But you know, him coming off of the COVID, this will really be his essentially third week of practice, because of the residual effects he had from the, you know, the coronavirus there that he had. But you know, I would say last week was better than the week before, and I'm excited to see what he's got going on this week.
And also, what are you guys going to do at outside backer? You've had three up for these games. You now lose Beasley, but are there enough bodies there to get enough rest for Clowney and Landry when they're not getting sacks on the quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, the depth of, again, like we talked about earlier, that the depth will come from probably the practice squad, you know. We'll work through practice this week and see how that goes at the end of the week.
Gentry?
Yeah, John, as you've watched the defense over the course of the season, what do you view as the issues for why they've not been as good on that side of the ball?
Yeah, that's a good question, Gentry. I think it's there's a lot of things. We've been back there a couple times. We were back there a couple times on Sunday against Cincinnati and couldn't get Burrow on the ground. There's times where we're close. We're just not quite there. I think it's really execution. You know, it boils down to doing a great job of communicating. There's a lot that goes into the play, more so than just getting a call and going out there and playing that call. There's checks that have to be made. There's different techniques of how you're playing this and that. It's communication on the field, so that we can go out and execute and have a successful play of defense.
Paul?
John, hi. Was there competition for Beasley? Or did it take 9.5 guaranteed to get him to continue to play, as opposed to the sort of incentive-laden contract you'd usually see for somebody on a prove-it deal?
Yeah, there was a couple teams that were in on him there, and we not to get into how deals are crafted, but was looking for a multi-year, and then we kind of backed out of that and decided that a 1 year was better. And in hindsight, glad that we did that and didn't have a bunch of, you know, future guaranteed money tied up there. Again, it's unfortunate that it happened. At the end of the day, the blame falls on me. I've got to do a better job there and with the whole process.
How do you assess what you and the organization have done at that edge position since you've been around?
Yeah, I mean we've had some production there with, you know, we drafted Harold Ragpo and Derek Morgan were here when I got here, so those guys were on the roster and we're constantly, you know, looking for guys to work and improve there. Again, hindsight's always 20/20, but JD's given us some really good snaps, some pressure snaps. He plays hard. I love his effort. He's coming along there, and we certainly hoped that we were going to get some return on Vic there, but at the end of the day, that did not happen.
Joe?
Yeah, I apologize if this has been asked. My Wi-Fi has messed up a little bit, John, but I'm kind of just following up on what you just said about Clowney. What is your evaluation of him overall relative to what you invested in him, and how do you feel about the fact that basically there's more on him now to give you guys an edge presence with.
Yeah, I think you were asking about Clowney and him taking, you know, on maybe more now that that Vic's gone. I think that JD's given us some really good snaps. He's made some disruptive plays in every game that he's been in. We move him around. Coach Vrabel does a good job of trying to put him in position to be successful and get back there. And there's been plays that he has disrupted, like in the Cincinnati game, he knocked the ball out in the Pittsburgh game, ball bounced right back up to Claypool. He's working to get back to making those plays and getting those, either a turnover or a sack or whatever it may be.
Terry?
John, on the Beasley front, you said that you didn't feel like it was a lack of effort. Do you feel like that maybe his physical skill set was not what you thought it was or had been in Atlanta? Or do you feel like he was just a misfit from a scheme situation?
No, I think he had the athletic skill set to play, you know, outside linebacker in our defense. Trust me, I've gone back and watched the some of the Atlanta stuff over the last few weeks, and was a guy that you know, he showed burst and he showed chase and made some disruptive plays. Those just never manifested themselves here, and the reason why we made the move that we made.
And then on Bo's situation. Did you feel like there was clearly a drop off in his performance after he returned from the COVID list?
Yeah, I'd have to, you know, go back and look at those early snaps. But I felt like that through the course of practice and certainly the games, to your point, over the last few weeks after this COVID thing, that something was just a little off. You know, with the accuracy and the consistency there. So, again, wish him nothing but the best. But, you know, we're moving forward.
Luke,
John, when you're watching persistent struggles like what we've seen from the defense on third down this year, and I know you evaluate the roster every day, but at what point do you decide, and what sort of tips the scales in favor of pulling the trigger? And making moves like, you know, trading for a new player and releasing two starters, at what point does it become clearly a personnel problem?
Well, I mean, I think that's my charge, is to evaluate the roster every day and to work to put, you know, the 53 guys on the active, 16 on the practice squad, and then talk with Mike and put the guys up on game day that give us the best chance to win. And that's what I have to do is look at those and make those decisions. Those aren't easy decisions for me to make, but they're what I'm charged to do, is to make changes when we as a organization, as a team, collectively feel that's what's in the best interest.
Chris Harris.
Hey, John, I'm curious, what message do you think these roster moves send to the team?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, what we try to do is put guys out there to help us win games. At the end of the day, the ultimate goal is to win football games. You know, whatever. There's no hidden message, or we don't make moves to send messages. We make moves to try to help us win football games.
See if we can squeeze in a couple of follows, Eric.
Hey, John, what have you seen from Gostkowski? How long a leash is there for a kicker, you know, even for a guy like Gostkowski with his track record?
Yeah, I mean, I think Stevens, you know, he's had a few blocks. He's won games for us too, though. You know, he came back in that Denver game and hit a ball and won that game, and hit a ball in the Jacksonville game to win the game for us. The one versus Pittsburgh and the one Sunday versus Cincinnati, they were headed right down the middle, and for whatever reason, the ball flight, whether it was wind or whatever it may be, it just kind of moved to the right a little bit. It was headed right down, you know, right down the middle. But we got confidence in Steve. He's a pro. He handles pressure, and I'm sure he puts, you know, more pressure on himself than we do. But we've got confidence in him to go out there and put a foot on the ball and put it through.
That's Titans General Manager John Robinson, and that's brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Anything stand out to you guys? Willie, what stood out to you?
Well, there was a lot, no question. I thought that was very comprehensive on a lot of subjects, but, of course, the headline is going to be Beasley, and he did say, look, it's on me. Not everything we do works, and it clearly didn't work. We tried. We thought it was a match. We thought the measurables were there. We thought a fresh start would help. We thought Mike Vrabel, with his expertise, could bring out the best in him, but it was a bust. I mean, there's no two ways about it. You are the other quote that jumped out to me is, you are judged on your performance. And so Vic Beasley's performance wasn't up to snuff. They ate the money. He was glad it's only a one-year deal, but he's like, hey, I swung and missed on that one.
Yeah, and I appreciate his honesty with that. And he's generally been pretty good about that. If he goes after a guy and it doesn't work, or, you know, So, I mean, for him to address the media like he did after a day like yesterday shows you a lot about John Robinson. He's still got to get it right. There's a lot of football left to be played. He's got to now make the corresponding moves, whether it's from the practice squad or elsewhere. The trade deadline has passed. He did make one move, but he's still got to fill those spots. But
that's the question. So what do you got, especially at Beasley's position? I wish I'd heard a little bit more on that. Chase, I don't know if you got anything from that. I
assume it's going to be, you know, Roberson's going to have to be healthy and play a bigger role.
They have a choice, yeah. Roberson.
But where is he? I mean, he has been
Wyatt
a
Ray man. Out there. I mean, there's guys that we haven't really seen that they're going to have to be forced into action now, I would think. I think what's a little confusing to me is, you know, you're based on your production or performance. Well, I mean, I didn't really get that sense out of Gostkowski. I mean, they seem to be completely, you know.
With Clowney, too.
Clowney, too.
Very, I mean, very, two, very upbeat about very, those two guys.
Very positive, yet you say about Brinkley and, you know, Joseph and Beasley, the three guys you did cut, it's really based on performance. And I get that, but, well, but you have, if that's the case, then we've stated it. It's well documented on the show. I mean, Gostkowski is the worst kicker in the NFL. Okay, so it's not all on performance, because if that were the case, you'd be shopping for a new kicker. You'd be looking for a new kicker because he's been the worst in the league. And so the woes have been this way all season. They've escaped in some of the games, and then some of the games they haven't. And then it feels like, you know, a lot of it's – and I get it. It's true. A lot of it's not his fault, but it's still part of it. And when things get blocked, or that's part of it. I mean, it's just like a quarterback getting sacked. Sometimes it's on the quarterback. Sometimes it's on the offensive line. I mean, you know, there's blame to go around, but in the end, you're still going to get in the category, you got sacked. Whoever's to blame for it, it goes down as getting sacked. And so I had a little hard time with that one on, you know, based on performance, because there's two guys that are not performing on this roster, and yet every time Mike Vrabel or John Robinson talk about them, it seems to still be semi-glowing about them, and it's not about their performance.
I think they're trying to keep instilling the confidence, and they will not throw those guys under the bus. I did think it was an interesting contrast in the way they sort of part ways with Joseph and Brinkley. He said, you know, those guys are pros. I have nothing but respect for those guys. He did not say the same thing about Beasley, even though when he was asked about specifically the effort and desire, and was that up to snuff, he would not say it. But if you read between the lines, clearly they didn't think he was bringing everything to the table. I think it was pretty fair to say.
All right, we will come back. Hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. But right now I want to talk to you about DraftKings, that is live and up and running in our wonderful state of Tennessee. Yes, mobile sports betting is here. That's DraftKings. You may know them as the leading daily fantasy brand, but they have taken their passion for sports and developed America's top-rated sportsbook app. This isn't some offshore operation. Like a lot of other gambling sites, DraftKings is a legitimate sportsbook that's based right here in the U.S. With the DraftKings Sportsbook app, you can bet from wherever, whenever, and you don't even have to leave your house. Download the top-rated sportsbook app. Use the code 1025GAME when you sign up, and for a limited time, all new users can get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Once again, that code 1025GAME. Get your deposit bonus up to $1,000, and that's only on DraftKings Sportsbook app. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.